New Year's Eve revelers gather in Times Square to see New York show off the big ball, and in Moscow's Red Square to see Vladimir Putin show off Donald Trump's balls. Oh. Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross falls asleep during trade negotiations with China. President Trump takes over and insults the entire Beijing delegation by proposing a tariff compromise, one from column A and one from column B.
Column A.
And the Hollywood Reporter asks Speaker Nancy Pelosi if she has seen Joker and the Irishman. Pelosi responds that unfortunately she has to see Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy every day. Well.
All right. Not bad. I like those. I like them all.
Oh, yeah. I wrote those 2 minutes before airtime. And you can tell.
Perfect.
Good to have you guys with us for, I believe it's episode 17 of the Wolf Pack. We close out this year. I'm Carl Wolfson, along with Kim Upham and Paul Block. Dylan Hyde's traveling over the holidays.
Where is he?
He's up in Seattle.
That's right.
As far as I know, our erstwhile producer is Patrick Zahn. And I can't see Patrick because he is behind me in our particular configuration.
This is
the first time I have ever done a show where I can't see the producer, which scares me a little.
But let it be known that just before we do the show, we need a minute of silence so that we have what we call room tone in television.
Right.
And
Patrick always asks for a moment of silence. And guess who talks all the way through it?
It took us about about 3 minutes to get Carl to give him a moment of silence until Patrick finally said, "Do I have to define silence?"
I'm telling you, when I write my memoirs, that line is going up. I talk so much that my producer said to me, "Do I have to define silence?"
How does that work for Gary?
I put it in the prenup. Okay. Actually, among the his selections for my gravestone are I told him to eat his vegetables, and he finally shut up. Okay. We are broadcasting on the 30th.
We should do a segment one day about the best things on people's tombstones.
Yeah, that would be a good one. Yeah. You know, I have to tell you, Dwight Slade, who's a fine comic.
I know Dwight. He is a fine comic.
I just saw him and his wife, Whitney, at a holiday party. He and Whitney and a bunch of folks were over at our house, and we were talking about Trump a couple years ago. And he said as he was leaving, "Can you imagine how long the line of people will be after he dies, how long the line will be to shit on his grave?" I mean, it may go like hands across America.
Did he remove his star from the Hollywood Walk because it was getting vandalized too
often? I think so.
Yes.
Yeah.
I would have vandalized it if I had the opportunity.
Yeah.
I would have peed on it.
Would you?
Yeah, absolutely.
And
but I would have gotten arrested because that's illegal.
And then you would have had a pee tape.
That's right.
By the way, speaking of hands, remember Hands Across America in the 80s?
I do.
Jeff Stilson, who is a very funny comic from Seattle and a writer as well, he had a great line in the 80s when that was going on. He said they tried to do Hans Across Germany, but two big guys named Gunter kept breaking into the line.
Oh,
I love
funny.
That line.
I love it too.
So we're broadcasting on the 30th. Tomorrow is officially New Year's Eve. Do you guys celebrate New Year's Eve? I loathe the holiday myself. How
I'll
about
be at
you
a
guys?
Wedding.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Congratulations, Heidi and Justin. They don't listen to the podcast, but you know.
Some friend.
I know.
Friends they are.
Right?
They don't listen?
I like to stay home, but our honorary son and daughter, Ann and Brian Sussman, who wrote the music for us, they are having a New Year's Eve get together. So we're going to go there, and the people in our condominium association get together around a big table at a place on 21st Avenue here in Portland.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go there too. But I don't like going partying. I don't like – once when I was in New York, I lived in New York most of my young life. I went to California when I was 30. I one time went to Times Square for New Year's Eve, and every year after that regretted that I did that. Boy, was that a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
Cold and crowded and why?
Right. Well, I loathe the holiday because, you know, I just finished my 40th year of comedy and really the
You're
best –
You're not that old.
The best one – yeah, I'm 41. Now, actually, I'm 39. I started in the womb. I worked that womb. But the – the crowds on – you make
womb.
Good money on New Year's Eve, okay?
You really said I worked that womb.
I did. And, you know, somewhere Henry Youngman is laughing in his grave. The crowds were the worst. I mean, they're pre-drunk. they don't listen to a word you said because they're not really there for that kind of entertainment. They're there to drink and be obnoxious. So you make good money, but you put up with a lot.
It's How's like that different from pay. Any other show, though?
Hugely different. Trust okay. me. Hugely
Let me ask different. What if you can do it within the confines of our time. What's yes. the worst crowd you ever had? Or is there such a thing? Or should I just forget the question?
You know,
because I have a little story.
I will tell you in the comic world, I'll just give a general statement. The clubs that did three shows on Saturday night, the third show Saturday was always the worst show. Club owners would try to stretch the dollar and get, you know, pack people in on a set. First of all, Saturday night is the night. You know, Mr. Saturday Night, Billy right, Crystal's movie. Right. Friday night, good crowds.
Billy is my wife's cousin, by the way.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. We're going to get to politics, folks. Friday night for comedy clubs promise. Can
we're
be very good.
We're going to talk about Democrats. We're going to talk about all sorts of stuff.
But Friday nights are kind of – people have worked all week and they're a little more tired. You can have great shows on Friday night. Saturday night, people are rested. It's a big date night. So Saturday night shows are fantastic. But when they added a third show Saturday, that's where you get the real pre-drunk crowd that doesn't give a shit. They are very similar to New Year's Eve crowds. So people don't want to – do a third show Saturday. They do it for the money, but it's considered the worst show.
Do you
comedy.
Know Chris Fonseca?
Yes.
Chris Fonseca is, to me, a brilliant Latino comedian, but he has cerebral palsy and he has to be carried around and put up on stage.
Wow.
But he got booked on the David Letterman show. And the day before he did the Letterman show, he went to a club in New York to work out his act. I think it was Comic Strip Live. I'm not sure. And I went there to see him because I like Chris and I was in New York. And the night he goes there to do his 6 minutes that he's going to do on the Letterman show, somebody drops off a tour bus of Korean people who do not speak English. Yep. And that was his opportunity to work out his material.
You know, that may also have been one of my worst shows since you mentioned it. In 1983 or 84, I was on Thick of the Night every week and I was headlining, co-headlining The Last Laugh in San Jose. And the owner of that club was notoriously Joe Torres. He didn't pay and he was, you know, he was stingy with the money. But the same thing happened. A busload of Asian tourists pulled up and he sold them all tickets and they didn't speak or understand English. I had the same experience. That may be one of the worst.
Now, if you guys beg me in the future, I will tell a penis joke that deals with Chris Fonseca. But until then, I won't do it. You got to ask me.
All right. Well, back to New Year's Eve. I had a party one time. I will never do that again, ever.
Well, you same reason? People
well, no.
Were,
my what? Friend, I didn't have a busload of Korean tourists. That might have actually helped.
Yeah.
So my friend
Everyone
said,
should have a busload
right, exactly,
of Korean tourists.
Yes, on the standby.
Right.
No, my friends said they didn't want to be on the road when the drunks were on the road, so they'd stay home. And I said, well, okay, fine. It'll be an open house. You can come and leave when you want. So between 7 and 10, it was perfect. Everyone was there. It was delightful. Had a great time. Everyone left at 10 o'clock, except for my two most awkward people in my life.
Are they the ones getting married?
No. And one of them brought a date. So the four of us tried to sit around the living room making small talk, waiting 2 hours for the stand ball drop. Then we're sitting on a couch squished together watching this thing and they wouldn't leave. And I wanted to hand out pillows and be
I
like,
would drop a medicine
door,
ball on their
the
feet
door.
And say the ball is dropped. You're
oh my God,
gone.
I'll never do that again.
You know, my best friend Larry Frisch in L.A., because I would have guests over for a party. And I would vacuum before the people came to the party. Larry would said, I do what my father's did. When I wanted to leave, I still pull out the vacuum and start vacuuming. That's a cue for them to leave.
Well, you can tell we've had a week off.
Yeah.
Because politics are not even on our radar screen.
No, but I want to mention one thing that intersects with entertainment and politics. How many of you saw this story that in Canada, they aired, as evidently they do every Christmas, Home Alone 2. Lost in New York.
It's been all over TV,
right?
That story.
And someone happened to notice, I don't know if someone in the media happened to notice, that Donald Trump had a cameo in that movie and it was not shown on this Canadian TV station. And Trump takes to Twitter and blames the prime minister, Justin Trudeau, for for ordering the censorship. His tweet was, I guess Justin doesn't much like my making him pay up on NATO or trade, blah, blah, blah. And then Fox picked it up and claimed it was censorship because people hate Trump. Turns out This bit, among others, was cut in 2014 to make room for commercials on Canadian television. So there you go.
But there he was.
Our adult about president.
10 minutes before we're doing this podcast, I'm watching Chris Elliott on television, and he explained that the only reason that Donald Trump was ever in that movie was that Donald Trump at that time owned the Plaza Hotel, and he would not let them use the Plaza to shoot unless they gave him a cameo.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I would like to re-see the movies Moscow and the Hudson because he might be in that, or The Russians Are Coming, The Russians Are Coming. He might have produced those. I don't know.
Except those were good
the
movies.
The Americans. He's got a cameo appearance.
Before we get into our questions, which Paul has tonight, I want to say that our thoughts are with I'm sure many of you as well, with Congressman John Lewis of Georgia. He has been diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer. That's a toughie. And he is 79 years old. It seems like he has lived multiple lifetimes when you think about how young he was with in Selma and marching across that bridge and all he has done in his life. But our good thoughts to John
Lewis.
It's
hard to think of this country without him.
It is. It really is. And I don't know if I said this on air, but in April, I'm going to Montgomery to see the Lynching Museum, and I'm going to drive to Selma, which is about 20 miles away, to see the bridge there.
As John Prine said, Lord, make me an angel that flies from Montgomery.
There you go. And one last thing. I know you're chomping at the bit for the questions, but I want to say a personal word. Former Salem, Oregon mayor, Mike Swaim passed away over the holidays. I want to tell you what a great man he was. He was elected to 3 terms as mayor of Salem, Oregon. He served the city from 97 to 2002. I know Mike and his wife Kelly very well. He created the city's first environmental commission. He encouraged the police department to hire more minorities. He had the completion of Salem's Riverfront Park. He really was someone who worked hard for a lot of neglected people as well as everyone in his community. And I have to tell you, Kelly and Mike were always my biggest supporters down in Salem, along with Aileen and Roger Kay. Whenever I would go down there, have an event, they were first in line to help fundraise and get out the votes for progressives. So to Kelly, I love you, and we'll miss Mike a lot. He was the, didn't make a lot of waves. He was a humble guy. That's the kind of public servant we need in this country desperately in the times of Trump. All right. You're listening to the Wolfpack, and Paul's spreading out all his papers here. Geez, you got a lot to say. I don't know that I ever get to say any of it.
I write a lot of shit down, and then I don't get to say it.
All right. Well,
but let's talk about what we're going to talk about tonight.
Lead us off with a question.
Fun be gone. We're going to talk about serious stuff now. Does anybody know that Donald Trump has been impeached by the House? Well, the House has impeached Trump, but not sent the 2 articles of impeachment to the Senate. So we want to talk a little bit about what we think Nancy Pelosi should do now.
Kim?
Take it away.
Well, I think she's doing a great job. I just want to give her kudos for masterfully keeping her caucus together and navigating from being against the House impeachment to having the impeachment trial, and I think everything's gone smoothly. I'm in support of the delay, although I do have a question about how long she can delay, because I'm guessing, and I don't know, I honestly don't know, that if she doesn't send over the articles before the end of this Congress, then they will have to vote again in the next Congress.
I think you may be right about that. That certainly applies to legislation. I mean, once the Congress ends, the legislation that's either passed by the House or the Senate has to be passed again. So I think you're
She's
right.
She's got some time.
She has some time, and I don't think it's going to go that far. What do you think, Paul?
I think, as I've thought before, I think 2 things will happen. First of all, Schumer is trying really hard to get a trial with witnesses. A trial without witnesses and without testimony is not a trial. Someone today called it a fake trial versus a fair trial. It will not be a fair trial.
A sham trial is what McConnell wants.
It will be. It's a sham trial. So unless they can – and now what I do believe is that Schumer is going to call for votes on each witness. If it gets to trial, I think maybe before it gets to trial, he's going to call for votes on witnesses and make people, senators – commit themselves. I do not want a witness, or I do want a witness. So that can be at least used for or against them in their campaign. But barring witnesses and barring a fair trial, I think Nancy Pelosi should make a big deal and get up on a podium in front of the world and have a written speech and say, there will not be a fair trial in the Senate. It will be a sham, and I will not allow my articles to be party to that sham. So I will not deliver these articles to the Senate. America, you did not get the trial you deserve. We're walking away from it.
And three witnesses in particular that she's looking for.
Right.
Mulvaney, Bolton, and Duffy.
Yeah, and now they're looking for Esper, too, because he's coming into the equation
as well.
The defense
secretary. I agree with what you said. And, you know, Nancy Pelosi, if you remember, after the House passed the two articles of impeachment, she went before the nation. Republicans, by the way, didn't have a – Kevin McCarthy, they just walked away. They didn't have a press conference after it. They had done their dirty work on the floor with all their lies. But she said she was concerned about Mitch McConnell – going on Fox and saying he's coordinating the defense with the White House. And this was – I love what she said. I'm going to read it. She said – she said, this reminded me that our – quote, reminded me that our founders, when they wrote the Constitution, suspected there could be a rogue president. I don't think they suspected we could have a rogue president and a rogue leader in the Senate at the same time. First of all, she should use as much time as she thinks is proper to do exactly what you said. Keep pressure on McConnell and the Republicans by saying, look, he has basically said he's not going to have a fair trial. And the Constitution requires a trial on the Senate on impeachment articles from the House. You've seen Alaska since we were last here. Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski said she was disturbed that McConnell said he's coordinating the defense. But I want to see other senators in this time have to come out and announce whether they support a trial with witnesses, as you say. Because, you know, we got Joni Ernst up for election in Iowa, re-election. We got Susan Collins in Maine, Martha McSally in Arizona, Cory Gardner in Colorado, Tom Tillis in North Carolina. McConnell himself is on the ballot. I think this time should be used – on that soapbox, as you say, Paul, for Nancy Pelosi to get out there and say, look, they're not taking this seriously. They're the sham artists here. And don't forget, we said this, I think, collectively a few weeks ago, new evidence is coming out all the time.
I just read today in the Daily Beast that Lev Parnas, he's one of the two goons, right? Along
Beavis
with Igor Fruman. Igor and Lev. Okay?
I like Beavis and Butthead.
Caught at the airport dining with.
But it was just reported by Daily Beast today that Lev Parnas is offering the House Intelligence Committee a bunch of documents and iPhone conversations that he and his lawyer have. So that hasn't even been introduced yet. The New York Times just did a story where they interviewed dozens of cabinet officials and White House officials, people party to this shakedown, and found out that this hasn't been reported. In late August, you mentioned Mark Esper, the Secretary of State Defense. In late August, Esper and Mike Pompeo, the Secretary of State, and John Bolton, who was National Security Advisor at the time, met in the White House in the Oval Office with Trump, and they tried but failed to convince him that he should release this aid and not play this shakedown game. So more evidence is coming out through reporting, through activity with the House Intelligence Committee. So the longer we wait, I'm convinced the more damning evidence will come out.
Do you think that this Murkowski's statement represents a crack in their unified wall?
Yeah, not a big
one.
A little one. It's someone. It's someone who said something.
You know, I have a lot more – as far as respect for Senate Republicans, I have a lot more respect for Lisa Murkowski than I do for most other Republicans. Remember, she was denied her own party's nomination for Senate a while ago. I don't know if it was one term ago or two. And she ran as an independent and won.
Right in.
She is right in independent.
And did she vote against Kavanaugh?
Yes, she did.
Yeah.
She was the lone Republican.
You've got to spell Murkowski correctly. So she had a little song that they put out as a commercial.
Oh, that's funny.
Telling people how to spell her name.
Her dad, Frank Murkowski, preceded her in the Senate. And I do respect her more. This is, you know, this is a this is in, excuse me, this is with respect to other Republican senators. So it's a scale there. But I respect her. And I think this is, I think she's, and look, she's not up for reelection. I believe she's doing it. But let me at the same time make another point. I hate when people like Susan Collins come out and they hem and they haw. This guy, this was a shakedown of Ukraine. It was a violation of the Corrupt Foreign Practices Act, the campaign finance laws. This man should be tried and found guilty in the Senate. I don't like the hemming and hawing, but as far as Republicans go, what Lisa Murkowski said was refreshing to me.
Well, also I have to respect her a lot more because the hemming and hawing happens and then Susan Collins caves in.
Every
votes,
time.
Votes for Kavanaugh or votes with Trump, whatever the case is. And then, oh, I'm trying to vote my conscience. And the delay really, you know, in that case, they just, you know, she's, how she's going to vote.
She's no longer a shoo-in for her job.
You know, the only advantage, I think you both of you alluded to it, the only advantage to sending the articles over right now or sometime is to force a vote by these Republican senators.
One at a time for witnesses.
Right, or on convicting him in the Senate. They have to vote. I want them at some point to vote on whether it's rules, witnesses, or convicting him on these articles of impeachment because, you know, I saw a poll, and I'm sorry I don't have it in front of me, but I saw a poll in one of the UK papers that said it was 55% now want Trump
removed.
He's already been impeached, but want him removed. So, you know, they're playing a dangerous game here with the Constitution and the future of their political lives and the Republican Party. I want to tighten the screws on them as much as possible.
I also want to point out a little bit of stupidity on Mitch McConnell's part. Mitch McConnell went out on television before the world and said, I'm going to be in Trump's pocket. I'm going to do whatever he wants me to do. You know what? Mitch McConnell could have done that without saying a word.
Right.
And he wouldn't have gotten all the shit
that
he's
getting. But he's playing the Fox. Fox wants that stuff. That gets ratings for them. And that shows the rabid Republicans out there that he's one of them. But it was stupid to do.
Yes.
Because now he is open to all of this criticism. And I believe Dylan said it a week or two ago that this idea of fairness or unfairness with a sham trial, this is going to affect voters in the suburbs, especially women voters who are just sick and tired of not only Trump's behavior, but this kind of banana republic shenanigans. So I say Nancy's doing the right thing right now. They need what she needs to do is say, come up with your rules. I want to know what's going on. Then we'll send over the articles.
We live in a country where people are used to getting all the information in a trial, where the jury gets to hear and see everything.
Right.
And if that doesn't happen, they're going to hurt. I'm glad they're going to hurt because I despise Trump. I despise the Republican Senate that is sitting on 400 bills that are meant to improve life in America that Mitch McConnell is putting in his pocket and won't bring up for a vote.
Why didn't he bring him up? I mean, he should bring him up, at least give the senators a chance to vote on it. We'll know where they stand.
That's what he doesn't want to do.
Right.
He doesn't want us to know where they stand.
So I think we're all in agreement on this. And as you started out saying, Kim, it was masterful that she took this issue of impeachment, was contentious, and she was worried about it. But once they got a solid, understandable case. And remember, I still say he should be impeached and convicted under Section 1 and 2 of the Mueller report, but there's so much that they haven't gotten, and there's so much they still haven't gotten from White House files, Defense Department, and State Department files that they need in this case.
They could be using this time to hold additional hearings on those issues, and that may be an interest, you know, that would sort of be an interesting tactic to do.
I also want to back up just a little bit to the day they had four lawyers in front of the Judiciary Committee testifying, and Jonathan Turley was allegedly the Trump witness. But he wasn't. He was not saying he didn't break any laws and shouldn't be impeached.
He was saying we need more information.
He's saying we need more information, and these two articles are a little too thin. They should have gone for more.
And you remember the speech that Kevin McCarthy gave, the Joker and the Irishman, before the vote. And he, of course, quoted Turley up and down Charlie, he didn't mention that at last count, I saw 750 law professors and scholars saying Trump should be impeached. They mentioned the one that came up there. And as you said, Paul,
he never said he shouldn't be impeached.
Right.
He said they didn't bring enough of a case. They should have brought more of a case.
It's a shell game and a sham, as always, with the Republicans.
And one other point is that Nancy Pelosi may be still identifying the impeachment managers that she needs to appoint.
Right.
And so, you know, there could be other reasons for the
She
delay.
Is so smart. I am so grateful to have her running this thing.
Right.
I really am.
You know, if she were running, maybe she'd win the Iowa caucus. All right. You're listening to the –
You might be right.
You're listening – oh, do you have more
to say? You know what? I just want to say a correction.
Yeah.
Sometimes my brain is working on seven things at once, and then my mouth just pops open. And I said the other day that Mitch McConnell – on our last podcast – that Mitch McConnell did not have the votes. And what I meant was for rules.
Right.
You need 51 for rules, and he may not have every one of his members in line.
And that's right. And that's why people like Lisa Murkowski, maybe Lamar Alexander, who is retiring, he doesn't have to worry about the Republican right-wing horde at his heels. So this is very much in play, and we'll see how it plays out.
If this was a shoo-in, Trump wouldn't be unhinged.
Right.
If this was a shoo-in,
right,
he wouldn't be putting out 200 tweets a weekend.
Right.
But you know, if the Senate does acquit, then his – he's going to say that he did nothing wrong, and he's going to be even more emboldened to continue doing what he's been doing.
And as I said before, every senator who votes to acquit him owns every crime he commits in the future.
By the way, talking about 200 tweets per weekend, I saw a post you made on Facebook about the guy, I forget his name, about how Trump's tweets begin and how they get retweeted and retweeted and retweeted, and that it's a phony Trump person that starts all these ridiculous tweets, and then they go through a cycle of different places, and it comes back to Trump retweeting them as though it was real.
It's right-wing amplification or echo chamber.
Right-wing amplification. Yep. And boy, there was a – you know, people are crapping all over Chuck Robb.
Chuck Todd.
I'm Chuck Robb was show me my age. Chuck Todd for not being totally in with calling a lie from the beginning. But this week's Meet the Press, if anybody can rewatch it, I'd surely recommend it. It talked about and it had some great people on the show talking about truth in journalism, truth in politics, truth in America. I really liked it and want to give it a plug.
Okay. You're listening to the Wolf Pack. I'm Carl Wolfson along with Paul Vlock and Kim Upham. Dylan Hyde's off this week. Patrick's on producing our show. You can listen to us on Spotify, on Google Play, and on iTunes. And please rate us. We got a lot of good ratings, I noticed, on iTunes. So keep rating, especially if you live in France. Do it in France. Do it in French. That's all
I've rated us like seven times. So,
pardon me?
I said I've rated us like seven times.
You have?
Times. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. You live in France?
I think you should be impeached and removed from the show.
Let's move on.
Yeah. And let's move on to question number two.
What can be done to really energize the Democratic base in 2010?
How can 2020.
I'm sorry. Yeah. How can we get them out? How can they get out to vote? How can the candidates get them out to vote?
By the way, let me say one thing, and before you guys chime in, I just read today. We try to be as up to date as possible in our podcast. I read this at Axios. Third Way did a really good survey, a scientific survey of 1,200 black voters. In three metro areas, not just in the city itself, but in the suburban, the standard metropolitan statistical area, the suburbs as well, of black voters in Atlanta, Detroit, and Philadelphia. And as you may know, in 2016, if black voters had come out in the numbers we expected, or let's say the numbers that approached Obama's numbers in 2008 and 2012, in Philadelphia, Detroit, in Milwaukee, Hillary Clinton would be president today. And it wasn't black women who stayed home as much. It was black men. Black women came out for Hillary. This survey done by black voters shows that not only all black voters are energized to oust Trump next year, but especially they've seen a spike in black males who want to come out to defeat this president. They think he is racist, that he incites racism.
He does.
And has made life for African Americans more miserable, more contentious, and more endangered. This is very good news. And to start this conversation or the answer to question two, I would say, of course, the biggest incentive for anyone is to get rid of Donald Trump. Take it away.
Well, yes, so I agree with you.
My number one solution for how to get Democrats energized is to have Oprah as our nominee. But that does not look like it's happening right at the moment.
Well, but you're close on that. I mean, you're barking up the right tree.
Dude, if everyone could get a car, we'd have it nailed.
an electric vehicle. Everyone needs an EV.
Absolutely. Okay?
By the way, the Ford Mustang electric vehicle is coming out, and there's a huge back order for people who want it.
Good.
I just wanted to say that. But I think to energize – first of all, I believe, and I'm not yet – making a declaration of who I want to win. But I think that Joe Biden is going to be the Democratic candidate for president.
Maybe or maybe not. We don't know.
Maybe or maybe not. And I think to energize the Democratic Party, Joe Biden needs to, if he's the nominee, needs to appoint a black woman to run with him as vice president.
Stacey Abrams.
Stacey Abrams or Kamala Harris. There was some talk today. He said he wouldn't be averse to a Republican, but he can't think of one. I can't think of one either. And I've tried. You know.
Can I just stop you right there?
Go right
and,
ahead.
You know, I love Joe Biden, but I kind of wish he had not said that. I can think of very few things that would anger Democrats than having a man in his 70s pick a potential successor of the opposite party. That was a mistake in
right
my
there,
opinion.
Carl. We're going to be saying that a lot in 2020. I wish Biden had not said
well,
this.
Well, you know, look. I will also say today
he
in
did
New
say
Hampshire,
he can't think of one.
Today in New Hampshire, he was in a town hall style meeting. There were a man and a woman were heckling him. They were Trumpers or ringers that Trump paid or his campaign sent, and they were heckling him, and they said, how much money did you and your son make in Ukraine? And Biden said very quickly, I released 21 years of my tax returns. Your guy has released none, to a standing ovation. So Joe is Joe. He can take care of himself. Every candidate has ideas. You know, we talked about Elizabeth Warren and the trouble she got in trying to with the single payer. But we're all going to have missteps. And your point is granted on Joe. But let's go to the point about Stacey Abrams. Is the running mate more important this year? I would say it is, because you know the Democratic Party is split left and center left. We have to have a unity ticket somehow.
Well, that was going to be on my wish list right after Oprah. Is there any way to merge these lanes? Because we are always talking about this lane and that lane, and we need a merging of the lanes. There's got to be some way to come up with – I mean, people are passionate about their candidates, and that's all well and good, but when it comes down to the nominee, we're going to have to be unified behind this person.
I have an unusual idea, believe it or not. I think the way to merge those lanes is all of these people that we're liking or not liking or liking a little or liking more than others, you know, the Steyers, the Yangs, the Warrens, the Sanders, the Bidens. I think whoever gets the nomination should declare that that person is going to run as a team, that person should line up behind him. Every one of the people that's been running.
Him or her.
Every person that's been running, and with a statement that these people are going to be the government.
You know what? You're reading my mind, because look what I have: unity ticket and team effort. I used to listen to talk radio in the 80s and 90s in L.A. In the 80s, there was a guy on KABC named Ira Fistel who had a show around midnight. And as a comic, you stay up late at night. And I loved Ira. He was very much into history and politics. He suggested – and I actually don't think this is a good idea after I thought about it. But he suggested when a person gets the nomination of a party, they should name a shadow cabinet. They should name everyone, yes, but everyone that's going to be in their administration. But I'm thinking now that that's probably not the best idea, because then you have multiple targets. If one of them has a corruption thing, remember when you've got vice presidents, Thomas Eagleton, if one gets hit, then all the focus is on that. You have to say, okay, they can't be, and then you're off into left field with something. However, what I believe is, and I think what you're alluding to, Paul, is that every one of these candidates who has been running for the Democratic nomination, save Tulsi Gabbard, who's going to get a Fox contract, should be holding rallies everywhere in the country. Julian Castro should be holding rallies. Marianne Williamson should be holding rallies. Cory Booker should be holding rallies. I know that Bernie Sanders did do joint rallies with Hillary Clinton. This needs to be a full court press. We need to run as a team. We need to run with as a Democratic team that tells the people of this country, we're going to give you better paying jobs for the renewable energy future. We're not going to give you false hope with cold jobs. We're going to give you the best paying jobs and lead the world in renewable energy. We're going to finally achieve affordable health care for all Americans. We're going to have excellent public schools, and we're going to end this Trump corruption. Four things. Maybe there's a fifth thing, but jobs for the energy future that really pay well, affordable health care for everybody in this country, excellent public schools, and end the Trump corruption and embarrassment. I think if they get it down to 4 or 5 points and run in every corner of this country with all of the talent they have to muster, we will show that Democrats, we can do better as a country. That would be a great slogan. Trump has made America small. We can do better.
We have a history of cleaning up the messes after Republican presidents.
Right. And there's going to be a mess, let me tell you.
And I know you're talking generalities, but specifically we've got to stay after climate change. I mean, that's so important.
Well, that's why my first point is the jobs we create, the best paying jobs, especially in places that are depressed, like the so-called Rust Belt, will be to engineer the renewable energy future. Combine them. Combine them.
I think your first point was that everyone gets an electric car when Oprah's the steps forward.
And all of the candidates, once one is chosen, all of the candidates got to come together, not argue, come together on the best way to achieve universal health care in the United States.
We have to make a full court press with Bernie, with Elizabeth, with Julian, with Cory, with Kamala, with everybody.
With Amy. Because
with Amy. Everyone has a niche. Everyone has a talent. And this, we need to run as a party and say, not the full contract of America, 10 or 12 points that Newt Gingrich have, but maybe 3 or 4 bullet points. And the biggest one out there on people's minds is we're going to end this banana republic that Trump has created. Are you guys into that?
I'm into that. But when you look at the Democratic field, you look at Andrew Yang. I don't think there's anybody out there who has a better vision for the future economy of the United States.
And he's getting 5 and 6% of the poll made up of young people.
Yang gang is ferocious.
The Yang gang is real. Remember, he was still on the debate stage this month after governors and senators like, you know, Jay Inslee and Kirsten Gillibrand are gone. This man needs to build that audience. Tom Steyer, Michael Bloomberg, they need to be out there with the gun safety advocates. They
and
need
Bloomberg
to be
out there with his with
and his
checkbook.
Money absolutely needs to be
you
out
know,
there.
You know, he can, damn, man, if I had Bloomberg's money, I'd be giving $1 billion to the people who need
I'd
to
give
win.
It to this podcast.
You haven't mentioned Mayor Pete in your
I just mentioned him.
Okay. Absolutely. So, I mean, and I just want to say one thing.
That no, I don't believe that.
I know. Our producer Patrick snorted, who had to define silence for me. My favorite thing on radio was say, "I want to make one more point," which was everyone knew it would be 9 more points.
Translation.
Let's say that the biggest advantage for Trump is the economy. That's what everyone says. I want Democrats to, and I understand it's how you feel. Are you better off? Are you worse off? But I don't think anyone in this – very few people in this country who couldn't afford health care before could afford it now.
I don't think
the price of college has gone down for anyone, right?
Nor has the price of tomatoes.
You know what? Honestly, the place I think he's succeeding most is the culture wars.
Right. But We're not going to win the people who believe that Confederate monuments should be lifted up, not taken. We're not going to win those people. We're going to win on the issues that I just mentioned that we won on in 2018, the pocketbook issues that affect everyone's lives. You know, people, if they have to go to the emergency room or they can't afford their health insurance, if they're on a fixed income and they can't, and God knows what he's going to do to Social Security. I just want to mention, I know these are facts, but we have to take these facts and put a human face to them. This is from the Nonpartisan Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. Trump's contribution to the national debt on all the bills he's already signed is projected to be more than $4.1 trillion. Throw this back at the Republicans in their faces. People, this is a good way to say it. You have to balance your budget at home. You know, you do have credit cards, but you have to live reasonably. How can Donald Trump say that the economy is the best ever, which it isn't, when he's putting on a credit card? And by the way, almost $2 trillion of that debt, $1.8 trillion, comes from his tax cuts for the wealthy and corporations. It didn't go to the people we want.
And that's what's keeping the stock market high.
Right, right.
So that's the success that people are pointing to.
Right.
Which mostly benefits wealthy people.
And this BS that he's created the greatest economy in our nation's history is just that. It's BS. He promised economic growth between 3 and 4%. It's just been 2.2%. He said he would eliminate the trade deficit. It's up 40% since he took office. And here is the real pain for a lot of people. According to the American Farm Bureau, farm bankruptcies are at their highest level since 2011, despite the fact that Trump has taken $30 billion with a B from our taxpayer dollars in bailout money for his failed trade war. Okay? So when people tell you, as he and his cult will, that this is the greatest economy in the world, he didn't engineer anything. He has engineered a lot of pain and continued misery for a lot of middle-class voters and a lot of farmers out there. He doesn't get the props that he says he deserves, in my opinion.
By the way, the Rasmussen poll is the right-wingest poll in the United States. Scott Rasmussen. And a week ago, they gave Trump 51% approval, 49% disapproval. They gave him a plus two. Friday, it went down to Trump minus seven. He lost 9 points in the Rasmussen poll over a week.
You know, I've always heard it as Rasmussen.
And whatever it is, Rasmussen.
I think
Rasmussen,
Rasmussen would
Schmeckle,
be good.
I don't know what it is.
It would be good mayonnaise. I think it would be a condiment. Rasmussen.
A mustard.
Put some Rasmussen on your toast.
You know, when I developed and produced a right wing.
I wouldn't
internet.
You did it for the money.
I did it for the money. Internet website called PJTV, Pajamas Television,
Media.
Pajamas Media. And we booked a lot of right-wing. A lot of right-wing.
That's why he's quoting
no, well,
and you know, he's disguising as Rasmussen, so we won't know it's Rasmussen.
Yeah, my eyes are as big as saucers. Whoa, okay, now I'm getting new information.
I tried to book Rasmussen on our show weekly. And he wouldn't do it because he didn't want the world to know that he was a right-wing bolster.
Most of the world knows he is.
He knew that you couldn't pronounce his name properly, right. So he wasn't going to come on.
I did it for the money.
You were talking to Pierre Rasmussen. I think all of these are really good ideas, and we've got to have unity, and we've got to have a message that resonates with the voters we need and beyond simply the anti-Trump, which I think – honestly, I don't care where the economy is. I know it's harder to oust an incumbent president when numbers, quote unquote, are good. But the amount of revulsion toward Trump here and around the world is so great that can overcome, I think, a lot of things. We have a third question, Paul?
We do. But before I get to it, I want to say that every single Democrat rally for those people who are currently trying to get the nomination till later on, every single one should have behind them the chart of economic growth starting at the end of the Bush administration, so that we all see that line that never improved under Trump. It just keeps going in the same direction as Obama started it.
Right.
This is the Obama economy, not the Trump economy.
Right.
Our third question is, can be fun or can be something else? We're coming up on New Year's Eve tomorrow. What are your New Year's political resolutions? Why don't you start with that one, Kim?
One? Can I give you my whole
you
list?
You can give me 17 if you want.
A lot of lists. First, give money early and often.
I like that.
A lot of times giving money early can it can go a long way. So whoever your candidate of choice is, make sure to support them. And as an aside, I had a friend call me the other day and said, I'm very upset that Kamala Harris dropped out. I need to know why she dropped out. And I said, okay, well, so he said, I really want to vote for her. He lives in Washington, so it's going to take a while for the primary to roll around. I said, well, did you send her money?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, no. So give money early and often. Two, don't disparage any Democratic candidate. Support the nominee wholeheartedly. I will support whoever our nominee is. Three, work to get the nominee elected. I do voter protection in swing states, and I usually try to pick a state that has a competitive Senate race. So I'll be looking forward to that in the fall.
Let me interject real quick because it fits in here. I was at a Jeff Merkley rally.
Name dropper.
Or Jeff, Senator Merkley event in which I gave him $100 and I'm proud to do it. And one of the points he made was in Oregon, as in other states now, because we have vote by mail, get your vote in quick and then work. I mean, get your vote done, but then you've got time to make calls to other states, to drive to other states, to travel to other states, to convince other people. We have that leeway here in Oregon where you can vote and then work. Go ahead, Kim.
It's fantastic to do that on a day that you are election day. You can spend not only getting out our own votes, but other states.
Right.
Number four, support retaking the Senate. We absolutely need to get rid of some of these Trump judges and prevent them from filling those spots with even more conservative judges, and then support getting rid of the filibuster. So the Senate has to be one of our focuses,
I just want to say here to that, because we do have a chance to take over the Senate, and it is extremely important, because if Trump somehow gets reelected, you know, already the number of his unqualified and right-wing judges sit on Article III courts.
And we're looking
another 4 years would be disastrous. So we have to stop this in the Senate of the United States.
I doubt that Ruth can make it 4 more years past Trump. And I doubt that Breyer will make it 4 more years past Trump. So I think it's desperately important that the president and the Senate go Democrat.
Absolutely.
And then my last item is knock on at least 500 doors.
Good.
To get our nominee elected and Trump removed from office. And I was just talking about meeting a friend in Reno to do that.
And let me just give you kudos.
That's a good place to do that.
Kim, because you walk the walk. You do it. You go out there and do it. And I hope you continue to inspire people to do those 500 plus knocks on doors.
It's absolutely my privilege to do so. And I have never gotten more return from volunteering than I do from voter protection. Staffing voter protection lines, helping people figure out where's their polling place. How can I get to the polls? I need a ride. You know, I don't know if I'm registered. What documents do I need to bring? I mean, it's just so important and it's so necessary and it's so easy to do.
Right.
To just comment a little further on the judges, I didn't read the story today and I don't know if it was a true headline, but I read today that a federal judge just voted for the purge of 100,000 voters in Georgia. And that was a Trump judge that did that. So, boy, is it important to
let's all be woke.
Be woke.
And you know what? These states need same-day registration, because if that happens and you get disenfranchised, there should be a remedy that you can fix it, not 4 years from now or 2 years from now, but same day.
Yeah, there are good signs, and most of them are in the blue states, but there's also good electoral reform in some of the red states. And I will say, you know, Maine now has ranked voting. More states are going to early voting. We have online registration, DMV motor voter bill passed under Governor Kate Brown here, where you're automatically, if you're on the DMV rolls, you're automatically registered to vote. So again, this is the heartbeat of democracy, the right to vote, and they'll do everything they can, the Republican Party, to suppress votes, gerrymander, every trick in the book. So the kinds of things you're talking about, getting people registered, knowing where their polling places are in other states, it's vital.
Help people save time. I mean, you've got people showing up before work in their work uniform with their kids on the way to school, just, you know, making it easy for people to vote.
I got a few. Some are a little more personal. I want to do less Facebook. And I don't want to let those that lie and support fascism get under my skin like I have in the past. I don't want to take anything personally. I want to just not deal with
this. By the way, the Oregon Live, which is the website for the Oregonian newspaper, has eliminated comments now. They just announced that this weekend. It's a policy. I think they're a Gannett paper, but it's a policy that's company-wide because of the trolls on there. And it just gets so ridiculous. Go ahead, Paul.
Once the Democrats pick a candidate, just as Kim has said, I want to donate as much time and money as I can. I think it's critical, and that's a resolution. I want to correct loudly everyone that refers to the Democrat National Committee instead of the Democratic National Committee. It's not the Democrat Party. It's the Democratic Party. That's their official name.
You know, they started doing that in the 50s.
Rush Limbaugh did that.
No, they did it in the 50s. Before he picked it up, they were doing it in the 50s to irritate Democrats.
And the liberals, man.
Yeah.
Since I consider climate environmental problems part of politics, I resolve to continue my newly acquired vegetarianism into the new year, and I want to support and praise Pope Francis' statement of today that it is contrary to human dignity to cause animals to suffer or die needlessly. Yay, Pope. And I had a jokey one here that I was going to put in, that since the there seems to be a crack in the Christian evangelicals, especially the young ones moving away from the old ones in their support of Trump, that once that Christian evangelical support for Trump falls below 50%, I will become a Christian. Which I'm not going to do.
Wow.
You know.
That was a joke.
Paul, I'll tell you. You know, we could get a lot of votes against Trump to see Paul convert. I think that is wonderful. Listen, I'm going to be short and very personal. I don't know how many of you know my background. I'm not going to rehash it. 10 years on Portland radio. But after 6 years on KPOJ and approximately three on my internet show and half a year and then 2.5 years on X-ray radio. I left in February of 2016 because I really hadn't even endorsed Hillary, but I was supporting her more than Bernie in there. You know, that was a very awful year, not just in the general election with Trump winning, but among Democrats. It was brutal. There's a lot of things that went down, and the party has – many people in the party still haven't healed from that. And I've made comments that are negative about Bernie Sanders, and more recently, not Elizabeth Warren herself, but her some of her positions. I want to make it clear that I will work my heart out for Bernie if he's the nominee, for Elizabeth Warren if she is the nominee. I wouldn't work for Tulsi Gabbard, but don't worry, she's not going to be the nominee. I will work my heart out for our nominee. And I would challenge anyone out there who writes on Facebook or says in their personal life that they dislike Bernie or that Biden's too old or Pete can't win the black vote, whatever it is, let's let that hardcore stuff go. Let's let the hurt feelings go. This cut deep for me. There's still people I don't talk to about it, including some relatives I have. But I've got to let it go. We've got to let it go as a party and move ahead. Our vision of the future is, in my opinion, the healthy one for everyone in this country. Their vision, Trump's vision, is dark. His takeover of the Republican Party is one of the – it may be the greatest political tragedy of my life to witness. Folks, we have to – I'm sound like Joe Biden. We have to come together. If Bernie's our nominee, I'm going to be Bernie's biggest advocate. I will be Elizabeth Warren's biggest advocate. And those of you who are not for Joe Biden, if he's our nominee, I want you to be Joe's biggest advocate. We have to run as a team, and by doing show that we can govern the country in the way that it should be governed, not this disgusting banana republic criminal enterprise that's going on right now from 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
Hear, hear.
Okay. By the way, I forgot to tell you my favorite New Year's story. When my dad was in a nursing home, in Florida for a number of years. I called him on January 1st. I said, "Dad, did you all stay up for the countdown?" He said, "No, we had a fake countdown at 8:59. We were all in bed by 9:01." I said, "That's the way to do it, Dad."
The East Coast New Year's party here is phenomenal.
All right, we got a feature on the show, the Wolf Pack. Some things you may not know. Who wants to jump in?
I will. And I don't often like to do this, but I'm repeating a list.
I love that.
And this was a list that I saw Brian Stelter do on CNN's Reliable Sources. And that is the words that have worked their way into our lexicon in the last decade that did not exist before that. Bingeable. Nice. Screen time.
Screen time wasn't in?
Cyber safety.
Yeah.
Airplane mode. Page view,
yeah.
Clickbait, emoji, meme, deep state, truther, alt-right, idiocracy, and let me give credit to, I was going to give credit to the person who told me this one, screenshot.
Oh, nice.
And these are things that were not 10 years ago.
Yeah. When's the last time anyone had a foldable map in their glove compartment? Things leave.
Yeah.
Yeah. And new words come on. I love it. Very nice. Bingeable.
Bingeable.
What do you got, Kim?
Well, I'm going to ask you guys to guess who can run faster, Usain Bolt or a hippopotamus?
I would say a Republican senator when faced with a reporter.
Usain Bolt or a hippopotamus?
What's that first one? Usain
Bolt from the UK is the world's fastest human being.
Oh, okay.
It was right under bingeable. You didn't get it.
I didn't get it. Usain Bolt. Okay. Which is it?
Well,
it's got to be the hippo.
It's got to be the hippo.
Come on.
Okay, you would think so. No, it depends. Because I heard the statistic that the hippo was faster, but now you go online and there's differences of opinion about how fast a hippo can run.
Yeah, but hippo can't do hurdles, though.
The hippo's at about 19 to 25 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And Usain Bolt is 28 miles an hour.
Wow.
Okay. But hippos kill more people
than Usain Bolt
does, than any other animal in Africa.
Really?
Oh,
really?
Yeah. Oh, God, they're ornery. They swim fast. They run fast
and
on
land.
And
they have huge mouths.
So the average person cannot outrun them. Plus, you can go in there and play the xylophone on there.
I hope we get mail from the Hippo Lovers Association. Wow, I did not know that.
But there are six animals that Usain Bolt is slower than.
Who? What animals would they be?
Okay, so those would be the North African ostriches, 40 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Those are the fastest birds on land. Greyhound can run up to 43. Now, I think anything that is either a bird or has four legs, that shouldn't count because we only have two.
Right.
I'll go along with that.
Greyhound, 43. Pronghorn antelope, 55, also four legs. Cheetah, 61, was clocked at the Cincinnati Zoo, also four legs.
Yeah.
And peregrine falcon at 161 miles an hour. But they fly.
That's unfair. That doesn't count.
It's unfair.
So I think Usain Bolt still gets props.
Good. Yay, same boat.
Well, thanks for the hippo stuff. Did you say play xylophone on their teeth?
Right, like
why
like
you
Fred
try
Flintstone.
To do that? You know that.
This is my youth coming back here.
Who was Marlon Perkins' sidekick? Remember on Mutual Omaha's
Yeah,
well,
I used to book Marlon Perkins.
It was Jim. He says Jim will play xylophone on the hippo's tooth while I stay safely 100 yards away. It was always Jim that got the dangerous assignment.
And whenever those guys did the Tonight Show, Carson, he loved it. They used to pee on him. They used to poop on him.
What are you talking about? The animals?
Animals on Carson. Okay. He used to love that.
Oh, I thought you were talking
Jim Perkins.
He actually defecated on Marlon Perkins. I didn't see that show. I saw the Ed M's hatchet throw. Okay, so I like to do historical did you know. Why are there two Dakotas? Three reasons. And by the way, my husband is from South Dakota. So I have to know this stuff.
And by the way, I've been in every state in the United States except each Dakota. I was never in either Dakota.
Get going, man. I've been in all 50. How many, Kim? How many have you been in?
How many
about
states?
About 45.
This is the reason there's two Dakotas. There was a thing called the Dakota Territory, which had part of like Montana and all that. But by 1889, the Dakota Territory was what we now have as North and South Dakota. And in 1889, it was divided into North and South. Number one, most of the population was in the southern part. And they did not like the people in the northern part. They thought the people in the northern part were uncivilized, uncouth cattle ranchers and fur traders. They were always stirring up conflicts with the Native Americans. So the people in the South really didn't like the population of the North. Second reason, there was a governor, one of the most corrupt in history of the Dakota Territory. His name was Nehemiah Ordway. In 1883, the capital of the Dakota Territory at that time was Yankton, which is in the very southeast corner of what's now South Dakota. Well, he wanted to move the capital from Yankton, and so he formed a commission. And on this commission, he packed it with advocates and people who actually worked for the Northern Pacific Railroad, which happened to go through Bismarck. And lo and hold, the commission recommended that they move the capital from Yankton to Bismarck. And by the way, one of the people on the commission was the sheriff of Bismarck, who also worked for the Northern Pacific Railroad. So in 1883, Ordway said, oh, the commission has spoken. And we're moving to Bismarck, which really pissed off the people in the South even more. So that meant that they were going to divide into two states. It was like an undeclared civil war. And here's the third reason. The president at the time was Benjamin Harrison, a Republican, and he liked the idea of two states instead of one because he got four Republican senators instead of just two.
That lasts to this day.
Right. And by the way, this is back when the Republican Party probably was the better party.
Yeah, right.
Okay. But the funny thing is that when Benjamin Harrison, the president, signed the proclamations formally admitting South Dakota and North Dakota, he on November 2nd, 1889, he actually shuffled the papers so he wouldn't see which one he was signing first. So to this day, no one knows which was the 39th state, which was the 40th state, North Dakota or South Dakota. That's how angry these two areas were at each other. He didn't want one to be first over the other. When you see the list of states, it has North Dakota 39th, South Dakota 40th. That's only because they put them in alphabetical order. But no one really knows which state entered the Union first.
I think they should be part of Canada.
That's fascinating. I want to give a little correction. Usain Bolt is Jamaican.
Well, that's right. He is Jamaican. You're correct. And I went along with UK, but he's Jamaican. And
fended off some tweets.
By the way,
angry tweets.
My husband went to a high school in North Dakota whose nickname was the Irrigators. I swear to God. And my joke is at halftime, their cheer is
love it.
Yeah. Okay.
That's perfect.
Thank you for listening. This is episode 17 of the Wolfpack. Listen to us on iTunes. Maybe you're on iTunes right now or Google Play or Spotify. Remember to rate us as well. Who did the music for our podcast?
Brian Sussman.
Thank you, Brian.
And also,
we have Patrick Zahn behind us here producing it.
Producing the show.
From the Steel Door Gallery and the Lane Gallery here in Portland.
Who had to define silence for me. And I loved that moment like you wouldn't believe. Kim Uppen.
He asked you if you could define silence.
You know I can't. I can define the opposite of silence. Kim Uppen and Paul Block. I'm Carl Wolfson. Dylan Hydes will add to the compliment next week on Wolfpack. Have a good day and a great 2020.
Adios.
It's a pleasure.